This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
So, we're here with Sir Arnold Wolfendale, who is a previous Astronomer Royal and is currently an Emeritus Professor at Durham.
Hello, good afternoon.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your research? Have you always been involved in cosmic ray research?
Yes, well, one way and another I have. But halfway through my career, at least I hope it was halfway, I got interested in astronomy as such. See, my research was in the field of cosmic rays, these enigmatic particles coming to us from outer space, which incidentally really embraces the whole of radio astronomy because it's the minor component of cosmic rays, electrons, which are deflected by magnetic fields and produce radio signals. But the radio astronomers don't like to be thought of as a subset of cosmic ray physicists, so we won't go into that. But for many years I was doing cosmic rays, and then I started to wonder where they came from. That led into astronomy. And being a rather bossy person, I managed to get many of my colleagues interested in astronomy, and they changed their research lines from nuclear physics and so on, moved into astronomy. And now we have one of the biggest and certainly the best groups in astronomy in the world. I've continued in sort of cosmic rays, cosmic ray astrophysics, the physics of the interstellar medium and all that sort of thing. However, 2 years ago, I thought, Arnold, the world needs you to look into global warming, because there are some miscreants who said that cosmic rays were producing clouds through their ionization, and these clouds, of course, contributed to climate. And indeed, if you reduce cosmic ray intensity, then the cloud cover will go up and the temperature can vary. It's a bit complicated, but there should be a correlation. So we spent 2 years looking into this, and I'm delighted to report there's nothing in it whatsoever. However, there are solar effects, and that has led us into solar physics. And yesterday here, NAM, I was giving a talk about this aspect, looking at the way in which the surface temperature of the Earth, mean surface temperature, has varied over the last century, and correlated that with the sunspot number. It's a dangerous game, sunspot numbers, because it has strange connotations of sort of insanity among some people. But there is an interesting connection, and it's particularly germane because of the global warming problem, because undoubtedly there is a small, finite, positive effect of solar variation on the climate. So whereas I don't think there's any effect of cosmic rays, there is an effect of the sun. So I spent the last 2 years with two colleagues working full-time, despite my retirement, on this, full stop.
So you're not slightly disappointed that the cosmic rays from the sun is not actually correlated with climate change, it's purely man-made?
I'm delighted, because I regard cosmic rays as beautiful and clean and not willing or able to foul up our climate.
And just for the listeners, could you describe what a cosmic ray actually is? So which kind of particles constitute a cosmic ray?
Cosmic rays are mainly, but not entirely, protons, hydrogen nuclei, accelerated in some way through, presumably, magnetic fields in things like exploding stars, supernovae, and other systems, even bigger systems. So you have these particles coming in at the top of the atmosphere. Not quite sure where they come from, although we do think that many come from supernova remnants, remains of exploding stars. Although some come from outside the galaxy, and that's a topic I've been talking about today. But in addition, there are electrons, 1%, thereabouts, heavier nuclei, right up to uranium, and all the fun of the fair. So proton hits a nucleus in the atmosphere, the nucleus, central part of an atom of, say, nitrogen, breaks it up. Secondary particles, pi mesons, or pions, come out. They decay, most of them, into muons. God knows why muons exist. I spent many years trying to find out and failed. Had I found out, I would have got the Nobel Prize, but I'm still waiting. So there we are. But these muons come down to ground level and penetrate underground. Two things. One, there are about five passing through our heads every second. So that's conversation stopper. Two, minute fraction of them penetrate very, very deep underground. And we follow them 7,600 feet underground, where you get about one in a billion penetrating. And the rate there is low enough for you to look for neutrinos that have interacted, hit nuclear rock locally. And we did this in the 60s and discovered the cosmic ray neutrino. Should have been there, so in a sense, you know. But nevertheless, we discovered it. We concluded that the theory was right, these particles do exist. And these particles, neutrinos, have such enormous penetration that several of them that we saw detected by virtue of their secondary interactions. You don't see the neutrino itself, you see what it hits. And very, very rarely it does, but occasionally it does hit something. Several of these have come up through the Earth, all the way up through the Earth. So that's a fascinating area. So that's another type of cosmic ray particle. So the subject is still very lively, cosmic ray physics.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you got into physics? I think I'm going to say you were at Manchester when Blackett was there. That must have been quite an exciting time.
It was a very exciting time. Yeah, what happened was when I was at the grammar school in Stretford, which is near Manchester, Stretford Grammar School for boys. My father and mother thought I shouldn't go to a mixed school, but that's another story. Very wise. I mean, I wasn't particularly interested in physics until a new physics teacher came, Mr. Leaning, and he was very keen on experimental physics, and he got me interested. Indeed, I was going to be a naval architect, but the war came to an end just before I left. It was coming to an end when I left. And I thought, really, there's not much point in being a naval architect if there's no navy. So I became, and I've been interested and turned on by this chap. So I became a physicist. I suppose I should have gone to Cambridge or some such. But I wanted to go to Manchester because Blackett was there. And I needed to stay at home anyway. Parents were both ill and I wasn't too good. So I went to Manchester and enjoyed it very much. Had a staff appointment eventually. Blackett left and then I was promoted. Not because he left, but, and then the man who was number two at Manchester, a man called Rochester, who with Butler discovered the V particles in the cosmic radiation, for which he should have got a Nobel Prize and didn't, but that is another story again. He was offered, and he accepted, the chair of physics in Durham because he came from Newcastle. His father was a blacksmith, War's End it's called, you probably don't know, at the end of the Roman War on the eastern side, very old mining town, industrial town. So we went for 2 or 3 years, and that was in 1956, and we've been there ever since, and I think we'll stay.
What are the highest energy cosmic rays?
That's a very good question. There are some who think that they're protons, because there is some evidence for the alignment of the directions with certain types of astronomical phenomena called active galactic nuclei. In other words, very special galaxies, which are present to the extent of about 2% of all galaxies, which have remarkable activity in their nuclei. And it is claimed there are some associations of directions of the particles with these directions to these particular stars, if you like, extragalactic objects. However, we doubt that they're protons, and we think instead they are heavy nuclei. And the main reason is that if you look at another aspect of the cosmic ray results, which is the big showers that they produce when they come into the atmosphere, and you try and determine the mass, and that's the only way we have of doing it, by looking at the profile of the number of particles as a function of depth in the atmosphere, then you find that they should be heavy nuclei. So if they're not, if they're protons, it means there's something wrong with the nuclear physics that you've used. Well, that may be. So it's a fascinating choice between something wrong with the cosmos and something wrong with nuclear physics. Well, I think it's safer to assume there's something wrong with the cosmos than with the nuclear physics, because the amount of evidence we have about nuclear physics is very large, whereas the amount of evidence even now we have, despite the tremendous and marvellous efforts at Jodrell Bank about the cosmos, is still rather limited. So there's argument, and we have to wait for more data. As always, we need more data. We need more data. One thing, talking of Jodrell Bank, that has struck me, do you know Professor Kramer? He makes measurements, he and his colleagues, on pulsars. Is that what you're doing?
Yes, indeed.
Well, as I understand it, the accuracy with which pulsars keep time, the best pulsars, the best clocks in the cosmos.
The millisecond pulsars, yeah.
The accuracy has been superseded by clocks, by atomic clocks, man-made atomic clocks, to the extent of a factor of a few. And whereas no doubt a few more precise pulsars will be discovered, I'm quite sure that the accuracy of man-made accuracy of clocks, atomic clocks, will get better and better and better with almost without limit. And I think this is very profound, that humans can make clocks more accurately, or more accurate clocks than the Almighty. And on that happy note, I wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.